Hollywood guru. Michael, how are you today?
I'm great. Now that I know I'm a VIP, I'm even better.
Well, you are a friend of show at the very least, since you've been joining us for so many years now. And as per usual, no shortage of topics to get into today. And I want to begin with perhaps the biggest news in Hollywood today about next year's Oscars moving back to April 25th. And we discussed this a little bit earlier in the show. Would like to get your thoughts on this as well. I mean, at least in the world of sports, it seems like there's so much going on that time of the year. And I get it. Entertainment and sports don't always crisscross, although it seems like they've crisscrossed a lot more in recent years. Were you surprised to see them move it back that far?
Yes and no. I think on one hand, you're right. Like we are so used to having sports dominate the spring, and it really, the Oscars have always been sort of at that time of year, at late February, early March, where it's kind of the only show in town, and it's easy to sort of get a lot of eyeballs. But there's a lot of other considerations, I guess, going into this decision that are kind of related to the pandemic, not directly as in like getting famous people into the theater for the Oscars, but actually getting those movies out there for people to see. One of the biggest reasons that this decision was made was that it pushes back the eligibility period for Oscar films until mid-January for their initial debut. So that gives theaters and studios a chance to actually hopefully get some of these movies onto screens in the next couple of months. We talked about it before. We still don't know when that's going to happen, when we're going to have movie theaters back in full force, if at all. But this at least gives that much more room to happen, and it really makes it a longer period for movies to get out there. But another big thing is that it really helps protect the Academy and ABC, who broadcast the Oscars, in making sure that that ceremony goes ahead as planned. I mean, if things sort of had stood the way that they were, you'd probably see very few films that would actually be ready to go for the Oscar release window, what with either not showing someplace or not being finished because of pandemic-related inconveniences to production and that kind of thing. But there's just so much at stake from advertising, from just exposure for all of these movies, for the studios, for the Academy itself, that I think they're really just sort of, more than anything, playing it as safe as possible and making sure that they have an opportunity to put on a full Oscar ceremony the way that we're used to in a time that is certainly awfully unique.
Awfully unique is a great way of putting it, and I know that everybody wants the opportunity to see some of these Oscar movies so they can develop their own opinion or opinions on these things. And there really haven't been many opportunities for people to see movies, you know, since the last Oscars presentation. And hopefully we will get more of an opportunity to see some of those that might be in contention moving forward. And kind of along the same lines, a couple of movies within the last week have changed up their release dates. We're looking at Wonder Woman 1984 and the next Bond movie as well, No Time to Die. They've both altered their dates. So, Michael, your thoughts on both of these movies and when you think they're going to come out?
Well, both of these are like probably, I think, the two biggest releases that were set for this spring and summer alongside Christopher Nolan's Tenet, which we've talked about before. And they really all got blindsided. I know that the Bond movie, No Time to Die, especially, was the first one to get postponed. That's been pushed back all the way till November, so we're going to have to wait a while for that. That has to do more with its popularity abroad as well as here in the States. So really at the time, they were making sure that they had a release window where they could really make a lot of money off of the very popular James Bond franchise abroad. And Wonder Woman 1984, this is one that I'm very excited about. This was such a huge movie for DC a couple years ago, a really, really entertaining start to that series with the first Wonder Woman film. And this has been one that I think has a lot of people very interested. It has Kristen Wiig playing the bad guy. It jumps from World War One, where the first film was, all the way to 1984, but somehow Chris Pine's character shows up in it. So there's a lot of mystery surrounding it and a lot of hype, and it's a really big movie we're all looking forward to. It has an August 14th release date right now, not too far off of Tenet, July 31st. But both of these are ones to watch. I think that there's a chance in the next couple of weeks that we could see them pushed if theater chains are still not opening, if states are still not opening up theaters and that kind of thing. This is just, there's so much money on the table for these major films that are costing $200, $250 million to make, that it's kind of hard to just say, well, we'll throw it on demand, like a movie like King of Staten Island, or even, you know, some of the smaller movies like The Hunt that came out earlier in this pandemic. It's hard to pass up on that money. And as we've seen before, the theater chains and theater owners have a lot of power in how movies are distributed. And a lot of them were very upset when studios started moving some of their movies over to streaming. And so there's a concern, I think, about the theater owners being involved and whether or not they'll be able to make money. So it's a long way of saying I think there's still a lot of questions, but hopefully we're going to see at least two of these blockbusters by the end of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely looking forward to Wonder Woman myself as well. In the digital realm, though, Tom Hanks going to be starring in a new movie called Greyhound on Apple TV. What can you tell us about that?
I'm pretty excited about this one. It's based on a true story. He plays U.S. Navy Commander Ernest Krauss, who's leading an Allied convoy across the Atlantic in World War II. And then they end up getting chased by U-boats, and it turned into the Battle of the Atlantic, one of the biggest, most complex, and longest naval battles in history. So it's kind of a perfect Tom Hanks movie. He's playing a historical figure, World War II. We've seen him do this one before with very good results. So there's a lot to look forward to in that regard. But this was a movie that was set to be released actually this past weekend, and Apple ended up winning a bidding war to get it on streaming. So they'll have it on Apple TV Plus on July 10th. And this is sort of an interesting counterexample to the movies like Wonder Woman and the James Bond, where this is a movie with a smaller budget, smaller marketing campaign that theaters are probably not going to lose a lot of sleep over losing a Tom Hanks war movie in this summer. But they are for a major blockbuster action movie like Wonder Woman. So it's just kind of an interesting comparison between those two sort of sides of the industry, where they're sort of jumping to get some of these smaller movies on streaming while really fighting hard to keep some of the bigger ones on the big screen.
We are being joined by Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We'll be transitioning from Tom Hanks to Chris Evans, who also has a show on Apple TV. It's called Defending Jacob. What are your thoughts on this? What kinds of things are you hearing about Defending Jacob?
It's a pretty good show. I've watched the first two episodes so far. I haven't gotten all the way through, so I'll keep that in mind in my review here. But it's the story of a family that's dealing with the accusation that their 14-year-old son may be a murderer. Chris Evans plays a prosecutor who's also the father of this child, so he's sort of thrown in the middle. And it's getting really good reviews across the board. I think it's at 76% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. It has an even higher audience score. It's a pretty interesting crime drama and mystery, and certainly I personally don't know where it's going to go and how it ends up, but the first couple episodes have been very entertaining. Chris Evans is great. Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey is in it as well, and she's very good. We haven't talked a lot about Apple TV, I think, you know, as a whole, because it has sort of had a quieter release than certainly some of its bigger competitors like Disney Plus or HBO Max. But this is another solid program that they have, in addition to Mythic Quest, which is very funny, as well as Dickinson, the show about Emily Dickinson, which is also pretty good. So another hit for Apple TV. Whether or not it translates into bigger success for the platform remains to be seen, but certainly entertaining if you have access to it.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of the previews for both of these come up, not only Defending Jacob, but also the Tom Hanks movie called Greyhound. I mean, both of those look really, really interesting. I don't have an Apple TV subscription or an Apple Plus subscription, so I'm really thinking long and hard about that, especially after seeing the trailer for that Tom Hanks movie. I do have a Netflix account, and on there I found some interesting titles, ones I had never heard of before, and I came across one this weekend. And it's called Molly's Game. It was a really interesting story, and it has a really interesting cast as well, including Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba, who, of course, are at the very top of the list here, too. What are people saying about this, or better yet, what have people said about this?
Well, this was kind of a movie that was one of those that flew under the radar a little bit while also being very successful. It comes from Aaron Sorkin, who is, of course, the mastermind behind most notably The West Wing and The Social Network. He wrote and directed this movie a couple years ago, and it was actually nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, but it still was a pretty small movie. I think it made about $60 million back on a $30 million budget, so a relatively small release. I think it got a lot of good buzz, and I certainly remember seeing it when it came out, but it is one of those movies that, because now it's on Netflix and because so many people have access to it, really is getting a second wind and a second look at, which is pretty cool. I've seen it trending on Netflix myself for a while now and heard a lot more people talking about it in the past several weeks since it popped up on there. It's a really entertaining movie for those who haven't seen it, about a woman who runs underground card games. Jessica Chastain is great. She and Idris Elba have fantastic chemistry. It's a really fun, entertaining movie despite getting an Academy Award nomination, kind of behind the prestige of its writer, sort of flew under the radar, I think, in sort of the public consciousness.
Yeah, it absolutely did. It really is an interesting story, too, and again, an interesting cast. You know, Michael Cera's in there, mm-hmm. along with Kevin Costner. So there really is a bizarre cast. Plus, I mean, this is a story based off of, Molly Bloom, who, of course, her brother ended up going on to have a pretty successful career. And I think we all kind of learned a lot more about him. He played college football at Colorado, and, skiing's a big part of this movie, too, or at least that's a big part of the story. So I thought this was really, really interesting. All right, Michael, we can wrap things up by talking about this week's Picks to Click. What should we be watching this week?
Well, a couple of big adaptations are arriving on streaming this weekend. First, on Hulu on Friday is Love, Victor. It's a TV adaptation of the hit book and film Love, Simon from a couple years ago, about a teenager on a journey of self-discovery during which he faces challenges at home, adjusts to a new city and a new high school, and struggles with his sexual orientation. This was originally supposed to be a Disney Plus release, but they switched it over to Hulu and generated a little controversy around that. But it looks like it's going to be a big release on Friday. And then on Sunday night on HBO and all of their streaming platforms is the premiere of a limited series of Perry Mason, the classic TV show updated for modern times, with Matthew Reese of The Americans, Tatiana Maslany, and John Lithgow. It's about the titular character who is hired to solve a perplexing case involving the brutal kidnapping of a one-year-old. It looks really good. It has all the hallmarks of prestige TV. This is one that I have certainly been very excited about for a few weeks. So a couple great things to stream this weekend, and keep you entertained.
Perry Mason. Wow. Interesting. I remember the old school Perry Mason, so I'm interested to see what this one looks like. All right, Michael, as always, we appreciate your time and we appreciate your insight. We will certainly look forward to having you on again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Michael. Again, that's Michael Warschauer joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.